This is Believing Buckeyes with Brian Brownie and Chimdi Chekwa. We got a great show for you guys. Maybe probably the biggest. This is by far, by far the biggest show that we have done so far. We have, I mean, no introduction needed, but we have Coach Urban Meyer joining us today. How you doing, Coach? How's it going?
I'm doing great. Merry Christmas, and so good to hang with you guys.
Oh, yeah, we appreciate it. Appreciate you taking your time and joining us today. So we'll just kind of jump right into it. I mean, I know we have a lot's going on in college football, even though the regular season has ended. We're getting ready for the postseason now. Yep. And I guess we just wanted to kind of kick things off. I guess the biggest thing, the first thing that everyone is talking about around college football is the team selected to the playoffs. Obviously, we got the team up north. We got Washington. We got Texas. And then we got Alabama slipping in there. What's your thoughts on that bunch making the playoffs? And do you think that's the best four to be there?
No, there's 13 members of the committee. There's three former coaches, some former players, and then some really great people, all very successful people. And it's an imperfect system. I do believe they got it right. However, it just breaks your heart for Florida State. I mean, you guys are former players. Could you imagine winning every game and you're not in? You know, I struggled with that. I saw their coach, who I got a lot of respect for, you know, one of the best players in their country, gets hurt, their quarterback, and they didn't look the same. You know, people, they tried to compare that to what we did with fellow Glenville. Was it Tarbladder?
Yeah, yep, Tarbladder. That's right.
Fellow Tarbladder. I can't remember my address, and I still remember that. So, they compared it to like when we were down to our third string quarterback and we won, but we put 59 points on the team. We looked, I mean, some might even say better with Cardale quarterback. And Florida State, if they would have looked better, they would have been in. But they looked bad, you know, or not bad. They didn't look great. And they ran the Wildcat a lot. The quarterback is going to be a good player, is just young, you could tell. But it's just, I think they got it right. But you just feel for Florida State. You feel for Georgia, too. To say Georgia's not one of the top four teams in the country is probably incorrect. But they lost.
So this is where I struggle with it. Because, obviously, it's an imperfect system, right? You have to choose four teams. So somebody was going to feel like they got left out. But Alabama, all year, they played out of conference. They had an out-of-conference game against Texas, and they lost. Right now, watching Alabama, I watch them play, and they look like one of the top four teams. Right. However, Georgia to me looks like they're one of the top four teams as well. But Florida State played an SEC team and beat them. Then played their entire schedule and won. Got down to their third string quarterback in the championship game and still won. And would have got their second string quarterback back had they, you know, had an opportunity to go to the playoffs. It just, to me, it's the incentive, right? Because I feel like people are incentivized to do what they do. And I feel like we are now incentivizing teams not to play a tough out-of-conference schedule to, you know, make sure that their guys are just healthy at the end of the season and look good for those last few big games so that they win the judging contest and are now put in that college football playoff. What's the takeaway in terms of what we are now incentivizing? And do you think Florida State maybe changes up the way they schedule moving forward, given that it didn't really benefit them in this case?
Jim, everything you said, first of all, extremely well spoken, and you're right on it. I mean, there's not one word that just came out of your mouth that I disagree with. I'm a big proponent, for example, if Alabama somehow would have jumped Texas, every head coach in the country in AD would they play nothing but MAC schools.
Yeah.
You know, there's no reason to play. There's no incentive. So I feel you know, the Wolverines and Georgia had one of the silliest non-conference schedules you've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was embarrassing. And, you know, for whatever reason, but the players didn't pack that schedule. They just had to go execute. So what I tried to do, because I've watched film for 38 years, and it was my job at Fox. I want to at least give, you know, not just babble. I watched a lot of film on each team. And Alabama at that time on film was better than Florida State. Alabama and Georgia were very close. Georgia, I thought, was better, but they beat them. Mm-hmm. So you move them in. I feel you. How about the Buckeyes? The Buckeyes, they go on the road. They finish the game on the 37-yard line with a chance to win. They're not even in the conversation.
Yeah.
Right. And I get really angry when I look back at the 2015 team we had at Ohio State. We lost in the rainstorm to Michigan State. Mm-hmm. That team would have won it all.
Yeah.
That was my fault. You know, that's been whatever years ago, 8 years ago, whatever it is. And I still, that haunts me because that team was so good, but we lost, you know? So I feel you. And as long as there's this system and it's going to get better, it goes to 12.
Right.
But there's going to be people fighting for that 12 spot now too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I know going into it, like you say, we got the best four teams you want in the playoffs, and essentially the committee had to basically do what they had to do. But I just feel like it's a situation where it kind of reminds me kind of like the 12 team, your coach, your 12 team, where the team went 12-0, and basically just due to circumstances now that your team control, you don't get that chance to compete for the national title. So it just it sucks for them, but. I know it is. It is what it is. We all going to tune in and still support the playoffs.
I'll tell you this.
That's for sure.
I like the matchup. I like the two matchups. I think don't sleep on Washington. I saw Texas. Coach Sark invited us to practice when we were there, and we won three national championships. They look like a national championship. That's the best looking team in college football. And you guys played the game long enough. You know what I'm talking about now. Those D linemen. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I mean. That one's, what's his name, Sweat. I stood next to that cat, and he can run. He can do it all. I mean, and you know as well as I do, you want to go win, you better play defense. And you better be able to control that line of scrimmage or you're not going to win. And I don't bet against Texas.
Yeah.
So real quick, the Heisman Trophy went to the quarterback from LSU. And the president to me has been set, that the team, the best player typically on the one or two best teams usually wins. This year, it was the guy with the most stats. Now, he had an amazing year. I don't want to take anything away from him. But there wasn't a game. We talk about Florida State beating LSU. There wasn't a game that I could point to where I said, you know, he went out there and won that game. He didn't have a great defense. But he's playing in the SEC, the conference of great defense and all those great players. I just want to get your take on the Heisman. Who did you think, or who would have been your Heisman guy this year?
If Bo Nix would have won that game, Bo Nix.
Yeah.
But they lost. J.J. McCarthy didn't have, you know, they ran it 32 straight times, you know, so he couldn't win it. You know, Penix from Washington is incredible and had big wins, two wins over Oregon, so. Once again, Jim, I feel it, man. I mean, you ought to run for office, dude. I can't. I just sit and look at a articulate, smart dude like you, and you're hitting every note. You're right. He had Star Wars number, but then when you look at his numbers, it really wasn't that Star Wars. You know, Dwayne Haskins threw for 50 touchdowns, you know, and had some of those big moments. So I wish I had the answer. I don't vote. I think the best player in the game was wearing scarlet and gray.
Yeah.
You know, he's the best player in the game of football. I think he's been that way for 2 years.
Yeah.
But I agree. I don't think he could have won the Heisman. So I don't know.
I got you. So obviously there's a lot of talk around Buckeye Nation, right? The starting quarterback for the season, Kyle McCord, decides to leave the program and enter his name into the transfer portal. Obviously, there have been some quotes. Your quotes has been, you know, circulating a little bit about your thoughts on the situation. But it's just a tough situation, right? I mean, like, if you're a coach and trying to coach in these situations where your starting quarterback that's up and leaves the program, how do you even begin to go about that? Like, what's your thoughts on it? And, you know, in your situation, like, what do you do? Like, is it something that you came up with a plan for, something you think about often? Or what's your thoughts on that, Coach?
It's one reason I'm out. I don't know. It's incomprehensible to me. I mean, I think Kyle McCord's a good player. I think, you know, the media and the fans were kind of hard on him. But you look at those two interceptions against Wolverines, that was on him.
Yeah.
Marvin Harrison's got to finish his route, and he got hit. The left guard got beat, and he got hit. He was actually getting to his third read. Kid might have scored. I mean, and I just, when I see that, and I'm not taking a shot at Kyle, I don't know Kyle McCord. You know, my family knows him, and they love him. And he's a wonderful guy, and I think he's a really good player. I think he's got a long way to go, but it's first year starting, I know.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, I hear he's looking at Nebraska. Really? He's looking at, think about that. Yeah. I guess I'm like you two guys. I'm really biased. Yeah. I just think the value of that freaking place in Columbus, Ohio is so much beyond the football field. I think, you know, I'm very biased. I know that. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, right outside Cleveland, Ohio. I want to be around Ohio people. I want to be around Ohio State. I love Ohio State. I love the spirit of the university. So I look much deeper because football, we all know this, right? Football's gone like that.
Yeah.
Now, can Kyle McCord really go back and still utilize his, all the friendships and all the network system that he made at Ohio State? I don't know. You know, Joe Burrow did. Though Joe handled it when I had Joe, the way he handled it was, you know, and it was, he could have beat out Dwayne, and Dwayne could have beat, you know, just was so back and forth. So I wish Kyle the best. I have a hard time understanding.
Yeah. I think in Joe's situation, he competed, you know, he went through the process, and then, you know, you had a lot of fans saying Joe Burrow should win. You had a lot of fans saying Dwayne Haskins should win, and Joe continued on and always kind of always, you know, gave praise to Ohio State, you know. So it's a little different situation in that way with Kyle just leaving. I do see it from his perspective, depending on how the conversations ended at the end of the season, right? And I don't know how much Kyle looks at social media and what the fans say about him, right? But that probably played a part in it. But if in today's college football, which we didn't play in today's college football, right? So you have a player who has a very short window, as you mentioned, to maximize his opportunity. Right. And his opportunity now includes money, right? So you got to think Kyle McCord was probably after that season. I don't know what the conversations were like between him and coach, but he probably thought maybe they would look in the transfer portal to bring the guy in. And at that point, you got to make a decision. You know, I played a whole season. Everything I did is on film. It's not a lot. I don't know, coach. There's not a lot you can do in the spring. There could be some improvements, but who he is mostly on film for that season. And he probably at this point feels, you know, if they're looking for something else, then they're probably looking to replace me. And I might as well maximize my opportunity.
So the only question I have for you guys is that when I hear the word money, and I guess I'm 60 years, close to 60 now, and I understand the value of money. I didn't back then. If someone would have gave me 10 grand, are you kidding me? I would have did cartwheels through there. But we all know, and I've tried to raise my children. I even tried to coach this way. We did Real Life Wednesdays and did all those things because when you start talking about even $100,000, yes, it's great money. But go ahead and write, you know, the tax bill is pretty significant.
Yep.
Your agent's bill, 3%, 6%, or your marketing bill, what is it, 20%? You know, I'd rather say you got 40 years of working, man. You know, now generational money is different. Yep. You know, first round draft pick, signing that big number, that you're good. If you don't screw it up, you're good. Other than that, you're working. You're working. You guys know that. You got to go to work, man. And so that was always my biggest fear when I would talk to former players of mine. And that's why we did the whole Real Life Wednesdays. I was nuts about that, guys, when I was at Ohio State. I started that, and we had 100% of those kids were getting jobs.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not talking about Zeke Elliott. Zeke got a good job. I'm talking about the cats that are really, really great players that, for whatever reason, you only get 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And, man, I mean, you better be ready. That world's a hungry world out there.
Yeah, and I spoke to former players who praise you for that, because they were kind of coming from another area. One in particular is Christian Bryant, and he just talked about the benefits that he got from Real Life Wednesday and how it's helping him today as he's out here in the world. So, yeah, so it's a thing, right? And my thing about Kyle McCord is I thought he was a good enough player. I'm kind of like you. I thought he was a decent player. He definitely was good enough to beat Michigan and didn't go his way. But I'll just love to see him come back just to compete. Like, just be the best guy. If you're head and shoulders the best guy, no one, you get the team to respond to you in a different way. You get the offense to perform and the team to perform in a way that no one else could do it. Your job is secure. So if they bring in whoever, you know, you've been under the center here for a whole season now. So you just go out, perform, you know, step it up to the next level, and you show like, yeah, you brought a guy in, fine, he could be my backup as this is my team, and you go out and show that you could do it. But obviously, he felt different.
Right. And we all wish him. We all wish him the best. I mean, are you
guys right?
I mean, the guy beat Notre Dame, man, on a 2-minute drill. I hope that doesn't go away for him. I hope he continues to grow and live for it.
Is there a quarterback transfer portal wise, or even on Ohio State's current depth chart that you've seen and you just feel like that, you know, that kid has a real opportunity to be special?
I watched that.
Ohio State should go after or
play.
I know the Ohio State guys a little bit. I haven't watched them. You know, Devin Brown is they felt really good about him. They still do. And then their young kid from Lincoln, I think his name is, from North Dakota. And then they got Aaron Norland coming in, and then they got the young. So they're recruiting their brains out there.
Yeah,
at Ohio State. You guys know this. Have you ever seen recruiting like the receivers and the quarterbacks? No, I mean, five star. But I watch the transfer portal quarterbacks, and I'm not devaluing them. I don't know. I think there's some good players, but you know, Notre Dame goes and gets Wake Forest player Sam Hartman, who's a hell of a player. And then now they go get Duke's player, I think, right?
Yeah,
At some point, I think Notre Dame's got to go recruit their own quarterback and develop him.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the quarterback is so unique. I mean, you got to go learn a system, and so many things change. All of a sudden, to plug in a quarterback. And I know a lot of these guys were transferred. Bo Nix, Penix, they're all transfers.
They're all transfer guys.
Once again, I'm so old school. I want to recruit my dude. I want to train my dude.
Yeah.
I want to redshirt my guy and then let him go. And that's kind of what we've always done. But once again, I'm like you guys. I'm just watching it now.
And it's a weird time. And I feel similar in that if you do get a transfer portal quarterback, it's almost – to me, it's most beneficial if you get a guy who's a senior, right? And I got young guys on the team who I'm still developing. I feel like it almost is a detriment to get a younger player from somewhere else who may play for a year and then end up somewhere else next year, right? And hurt the recruitment and the development of the guys you currently have. Yes, this is a different time.
Different time. So, yeah, Coach, we really want to kind of pick your brain, right? So we know you obviously had a lot of success as a head coach, right? From Bowling Green to Utah to the national success at Florida to the national success at Ohio State. I just kind of had in my mind, like, you know, when you're going into this program, you're going into a new program, what's your main goal, your mindset to kind of turn that team into one of your teams that we obviously know have a ton of success? But what's that process like?
Yeah, I've always – Lou Holtz was a mentor, and so was Earl Bruce. And it really drives me crazy when a coach goes in and the fans, media, and God forbid the coaching staff says, I can't wait to get my own guys in here. And I would always start the meeting. I took over four programs, and Lou Holtz helped me with this. But I always, you know, made it clear the moment I walked in that room that you are my guys. And I would always say these words and say, "You guys did not pick me. However, I did pick you, and I watched every one of you on film already, and I wouldn't have took this job if I didn't think there's something here. Now, the reality is we got to get a hell of a lot better, or I wouldn't be here. So get ready. It's Navy SEAL training now. I'm going to put you through the most difficult shit you've ever been through in your life, but you're going to come out the other end better, a tighter team. I mean, what we're going to do in the offseason, you've never experienced in your lifetime. And as a result, we're going to know how to finish games because you're going to be so scarred, so mentally tough. It's Navy SEAL training. Yeah. And I don't know if you can do that anymore now. But, I mean, we we were doing things that, I mean, and as a result, you know, the people that stayed were champions. Some people didn't want to go through that. And I never had a hard time with that. When guys, I would actually encourage it. I would always tell them there's a lot of places in this country where mediocre is okay. Not here. Mm-hmm. We're trying to win every game we play. And by the way, we're trying to win it at a big margin. We're not working as hard to keep things close. And the player, you know, the real competitors like you two guys, they love that.
Yeah.
You know, we're not here because this is a good time. We're here. We want to damage people. We want to, at the end of the day, I want to make my biggest decision in the third quarter is whether to keep the ones in or not. That's what I want to. Those are the kind of players and the teams that I want to be around. So once the number one thing is I make sure these players know that they are my guys. The second thing is I put a lot of pressure on the coaches that they have to coach these guys, be the best group of coaches in America. And if you're not, you're going to hear about it. If I don't see players developing, if I don't see your drill work matching your scheme, if I don't see you care and love your players like your own children, those are all things that, to me, that's why we won. And it's so cool. Like Tyquan Lewis called me today. You guys remember Tyquan?
Yep.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Guy's an animal, man. And you talk about, I know Tress feels the same way. I'm very close with Tress and Coop. And when those former players call you, I mean, I'm warm from head to toe. Here's Tyquan Lewis, 6-7 years in the NFL. I was in tears laughing. We're just having a great time talking about the national championship and, you know, all the championships and all his teammates. You know, that's the kind of program I want. I wanted a hard, nasty, tough program where guys loved each other. And that's what we had.
So, Coach, does that type of program exist in the transfer portal era where, you know, I go back to when I played and I had days where it crosses your mind, you know, like it crosses your mind. Like, you know, this is a tough day. Do I still want to do this? Is this still what I want to do? Yeah. It's still what I want to do, but I didn't have an out. Right. This in the transfer portal era where you could just say, you know what? I could go play somewhere else. Does this type of program still exist?
All right, here, I hope you guys remember this because this is really profound. Tim Kite, my leadership consultant, I came up with this. So the way God created us, we want comfort. Comfort does not breed growth. If you want to grow a muscle, what do? You train it so it rips. The physiology is your muscle rips and then it grows. When you want to challenge your brain, what do? You work really hard, almost to the point of exhaustion, right? When you're studying and when you want to work so hard at coaching, it's almost the point where you can't work anymore. And so we came up with this saying that the edge is where average stops and greatness begins. So I'm an old man now. So I get on a treadmill and I screw around. You know, I'm talking on the phone, I'm reading, and all of a sudden I put it on 7 on the incline and I start going a little bit. And I'm like, damn, you know, here we go. You know what's happening, right?
Yeah.
I'm getting in shape.
Yeah.
You know, I'm getting in shape. You know, and I do my old man lifting. You know, and I do my 30s or whatever, and you're lifting, not like you guys do, but you know, if it's just nothing, your body's not growing.
Yeah.
So the edge as a team is when you get to that point where your team, where you just said, Jim, you said there's been times. I got news, pal. Every player's ever said that. Every coach has said that. If they're in the right program. If you're in some awful program where it's easy, I mean, I don't know. But that's why, you know, Tyquan and I were laughing, you know, the transfer portal, I don't know, after one of our workouts, maybe the whole team would have left. You know, but then you talk to them now, and it's the greatest experience of their life. You know, the best strength coaches you guys have ever been are probably the toughest. you know, the most demanding coaches you had were the ones you loved, because they saw greatness in both you guys. That if they didn't play, your parents or whoever was, you know, if you listed the people in your life, that it wasn't always pat on the back. They saw something in you that no one else saw. And I always wanted our staff to be those people. We see greatness in Sam Hubbard.
Yep.
No one else did. We saw greatness in Tyquan Lewis. You know, no one else did. You know, we saw it, and we pushed him to the point where he looked at me in the eye with tears in his eyes and said, "We finally made it, Coach. We made it." I'm like, "Yeah, you're right."
Right.
How hard is it? I'm thinking as Ryan Day, when you take over a program. I think maybe Jimbo Fisher in Florida State did something similar. But when you take over a program where the foundation is set and there's been a lot of success, but you know, every year it becomes more of what your foundation is, right? I'm just interested in, you know, how challenging is it to, one, you want to keep some of what was good from before, but you also want to make it, you know, what you create or what you do. You think that's something that's challenging, or is it more of a head start?
Yeah, I always like taking over places that were a mess. You know, because you could blow it up and you would never hear, "Well, this is the way they used to do it."
Yeah.
And I would always say you take either a fire hose to it, you take a garden hose, you just clean it up a little bit. I went to Bowling Green. They had 6 straight losing seasons. I think they were 2-9, 1-10. And there was a mess. And so I took a blowtorch to it, you know, or fire hose to it. I went to Utah and they were 5-7. And, you know, there's some good things, really good players. I kind of took a garden hose to it. I went to Florida. They had really good players. Ron Zook was a really good coach, but stuff was going on. Kind of cleaned it up. But I come to Ohio State. I know it was that probation year, but you're talking about one of the greatest coaches of all time, Jim Tressel. You know, and we believe in a lot of the same things, but we're a very different approach. And so that was very challenging. And the players, at first, there was some really resentment the way we did it compared to Jim Tressel. And I was very empathetic, and I never took it. You know, I said, "I understand it. This is the way we do it." Zach Bourne, once that team really bought in, that's when magic happened. So I would rather take over one where there's a lot of struggles, but then it's also going to take longer. You're not going undefeated usually. Yeah. You know, we have good players.
Yeah, Coach. So going into, I know you obviously do the Fox show, the Big Noon show, and speaking of coaches kind of coming in with programs, you guys spent early in the season, right? Colorado, Deion Sanders was having a lot of success out there. It was winning some games, right? What's your thoughts on that program? Is Deion got something going? Is it real? What's your thoughts on what's happening out there?
I love Deion Sanders. We were friends. We did a commercial. It's not long ago. I've known him. Like an 05 or something like that. And Prime, and I've stayed in touch with him. I recruited some of his guys. And I actually went out there and spent a day with him, and he was gracious enough to let me in and sit in meetings. And, you know, there's so much substance. Unfortunately, a lot of people see the bravado, which at times it is. It's a lot now. Yeah. You know, play my theme music and, you know, all that. In the sunglasses, I actually got a pair upstairs. The Prime. I went and watched him. He hired really good coaches. He is really good at talking to his team. He demands a lot. He's really hard on his team. So I think there's a great future there. But reality is, he's got to get some dudes. You know, he's got. And I see in the transfer, he's hit some of those linemen they need. I'm really worried about building teams via the transfer portal. I think you got to go recruit the freshmen, man. I want to go train guys for a couple of years. I would always say, I don't want people coming and renting this organization. I want them to own it. And if you only come for 1 year, you're basically renting it.
That's really well said. So we got to get into it, right? In your tenure at Ohio State, you went 7-0 against that team up north. And over the last couple of years, we've been struggling, right? Things have not been going our way. So I guess I gotta first ask, how big was the cheating? Did you think that played a role into the success in that game or lack thereof for Ohio State? And also, second foe, Coach Day, what's your advice for him so he can kind of get the team over the hump?
Yeah, when I hear people say that, you know, I don't know the exact details. I think a lot of them came out. Yeah. And when you start saying that everybody does that sign stealing, then you have no idea what you're talking about. Nobody
knows. No. Yeah.
The in-game signs, you know, you're allowed to in-game try to figure out what's going on and hand signals a defensive backs if you're a receiver and all. Yeah, you try to figure that out. But to send people on the road scouting, I've never heard of that. Yeah, you know, 30 cheap. Games, whatever. You see them on the sideline. I saw the videos like you guys did. The question, so the answer is yes, that's cheating. I don't think anyone's really debating that.
Yeah.
You know, Coach Harbaugh took a 3-game suspension. They were going to fight it. And then they said, we're not going to fight it because they must have found out a lot of stuff that we're still going to hear about down the road, I imagine. The question is if he knew about it or if he was behind it. If he knew about it or was behind it, then, you know, that's a hard one to recover from. You know, I don't know if he did or not. If it was just some rogue person on your staff doing it, which I don't, that's hard to even fathom.
Right, yeah.
So I hate to really cast a net out there because this of our entire conversation, this is the one we'll make headlines. is, first of all, yes, it is cheating. Number two is, if it was one rogue guy that was, he was isolated and all that, then, you know, that's going to be a lot different than if people know about it. And then yeah. Coach Day's lost. I mean, I love Coach Day. So I'm very biased. I wear my feelings on my sleeve a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
That rivalry game is real. It's one that I lived my entire lifetime. So I probably made it bigger than anything because I really believe it is. I know Ryan Day can get it done. He's lost one game.
Yeah.
You know, but it's the game. So,
yeah, right.
I mean, any conversation about making a change of the head coach, you're out of your mind.
Out of your mind. Yeah, that's crazy.
You just got to find a way to win that game.
You got to find a way. Yeah, see, me, so them not making the playoffs for me was huge. So, because I'm like you, right? I'm an Ohio guy. I've been living this game my whole life. Me and Chin, we, you know, we played in the game. We went 5-0. We beat Michigan every year, just like you did when you was, you know, the head coach. And I said, like, we got to, like, the team just has to be, in my head, for them to get to success, they got to be in the dumps. They have to know that everything that didn't happen for them this year, getting into the playoffs, potentially Marv winning the Heisman, lose some recruits. We have to be in the dumps, and just everybody has to understand that this is happening to us because we lost to Michigan. So you have to understand that you have to win this game if you want a chance to be the Big Ten champion. You want a chance to be a national champion. You have to beat Michigan, and I feel like this is kind of the start that something really tangible happening. Not making the playoffs, and have to really live with it throughout the year. You remember last year we lost and everybody kept talking, well, we almost beat Georgia. We, you know, we were the field goal away from the national title. It was like, but you lost to Michigan. Like, this is, let's not skip over this part. You have to win that game.
Yeah. You know, you're from Cleveland, so you lived it. Mm-hmm. I could tell you stories in the 70s, Bo Schembechler against Woody Hayes. You know, I remember watching with my father. I remember Archie Griffin, and I remember everything about the rivalry game. And, you know, I think that, and I was partially responsible. We kind of expanded our recruiting base. Jim, you're from Florida. You know, you go down to Florida, you go to Texas, you go, and all of a sudden you're bringing all these people together. It's much different than when you're from Glenville. You know, that's, you know, you're in school fights over that. You know, in San Diego, they're not having school fights over that. You know, right. I just grew up. I mean, you know, so I think they got to. I'm a little different than you guys. I understand that maybe it's the process, the mindset about to reach an end, you have to beat them. I'm so brainwashed. I never cared about the end. I cared about that game.
Yeah.
You know, I'm on Big Ten Network with a guy named Jerry DiNardo, who's a dear friend, and he laughs at me all the time. He goes, you really believe you can lose all 11 games and win that one, and you're great? I said, absolutely. You know, so I look at it a little differently, and I don't know. I just want us to beat those guys.
Yeah.
So whenever we lose, and that's the last, you know, three times, there is the talk about recruiting more guys from Ohio and the need to get guys that understand the rivalry. And I think there's some truth to it. You know, I played with guys from Ohio, like Bryant, and I felt like I was submerged in the rivalry very early on as a redshirt freshman, putting Michigan tape on my helmet on the scout team, right? But I do believe that I think it's a little bit overblown in that I think it's overblown in terms of the guys from Ohio. I think it's important. It's a part of it. But, you know, in today's game, you have to beat Michigan to win a Big Ten title. You have to beat Michigan to go to the college football playoff. You have to beat Michigan to not get the criticism and the vitriol on social media, wherever. Like, it's so, to me, it's just so much harder to go into that game and not feel the importance. But I'm interested in your take on the recruiting aspect of it, because I do think there's some truth to getting some guys who have grown up in the rivalry as well.
Well, the reality is there's a population shift in our country. And, you know, when the steel mill, you guys, this way before your time, but I was alive in the 70s. And it's hard to believe Pittsburgh and Northeastern Ohio was the mecca of high school football. It was the best high school football in the country. You know, Penn State, Notre Dame, the Wolverines, and Ohio State filled their rosters with Ohio people in Western PA, you know, and you did. But, you know, Maslin used to have 16 Division I players. They don't. You know, Cleveland, Ohio, and Warren. Remember Warren? I grew up right outside of Warren, Ohio. Warren, Ohio, my gosh. Now, you know, they're few and far between. They're great players. But yeah, there's not this mass. You know, you go to downtown, you go to Atlanta, and within an hour, you can fill four teams. You know, you go down to, you know, St. Thomas Aquinas, and, you know, it's just – and they have spring ball year – you know, it's football year-round. You go to Dallas and the – Metroplex area and the Fort Worth area, and there's so many players, and they've had 4 years of spring ball, so they're more advanced than Ohio players. We won the national championship. All five of my offensive linemen were from the state of Ohio, and I tried to replicate that, and unfortunately, you just can't. You know, there's not enough linemen in the state of Ohio. You know, and I'm not being disparaging, because if someone said you can win a national title, all Ohio guys. That's easy. I'm home every night sleeping. I'm not on a plane.
All right.
That's not real.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah, that's the best way I heard it. Thanks for breaking that down for us, Coach. Yeah, because we kind of start thinking about it a little bit differently. Yeah, that's a great way to put that. Yeah.
You definitely needed to hear.
Yes, that's for sure. So, yeah, so Coach, we really appreciate you taking time out your day to join us on the show. Once again, this is Believe in Buckeyes with Brian Browning and Chippy Checkoff. If you're a listener, please subscribe. You know, we need subscribers. You know, we're trying to blow this thing up and just really get some true Buckeyes into it and get our word out there. And, you know, speak a little about football.
How do I do it?
You subscribe on Apple. We're on
Spotify. YouTube as well.
And YouTube as well.
I'm technically not very smart, so send me a text or an email and tell me how to do it. I'll do it. Let's do it again. I love you guys. You guys are great. And maybe, you know, down the road, let's do it again, okay?
Yeah, we appreciate that. Merry Christmas. Yeah, Merry Christmas. Like to end all our shows with a Go Bucks and an OH.
I-O.
I-O. We catch you guys next time.